stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Successfully Selling Data Management Conference Call Series. The topic for today is DB2 and IDS on the Cloud. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Marcia Lyons. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and welcome, everyone, to today's call, DB2 and IDS on the Cloud. And today is our last call of the first quarter. We are going to suspend the series for the next 2 weeks while all of you are out there closing Q1 business. So just to let you know that we'll be starting up the series again on April 6th for Q2. But anyway, for today's call, we're very happy to have with us Rob Ahuja, who's our product manager for emerging technologies, which also includes cloud computing. So just before I turn over to Rob, I just want to let you know that for those of you who are participating in the Same Time Unite webcast version of this, if you do have questions that come up during the call, please go ahead and send them to me, Marcia Lyons, using the chat function in Same Time Unite, and I'll gather those questions and pass them on to Rob. Or, of course, any of you that are just dialed into the phone line, you can wait until Rob, until we open up the phone lines at the end of this call for Rob to take questions. So with that, let's go ahead and get started on our topic today, DB2 and IDS on the Cloud. And with that, I'll go ahead and turn over to Rob Ahuja. Go ahead, Rob. Rob, are you still there? I'll just note that Rob is dialed in from India. He's traveling today, so we've had a little trouble with the audio line. So I do want to make sure that he's still on the line.
It helps if I don't have the mute button on.
Okay, very good, Rob. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Marcia, and hello and welcome, everyone. So the topic for today is pretty exciting, at least for me it is, and I hope you find it useful as well. We're going to be talking about cloud computing and how DB2 and IDS play a role in cloud computing and how your customers can benefit from it. So I'm on slide 2 now, and what I'm going to cover today is give you a brief overview of cloud computing, talk about some of the use cases and opportunities that are there for deploying DB2 and IDS in the cloud, what are the various options for deploying DB2 and IDS in the cloud, talk briefly about what our competition is doing in this space, and, of course, where it matters is, you know, how does what we are doing on the cloud affect compensation for the deals that you do related to the cloud. So moving on to slide 3. Well, we know that cloud computing is hot by simply looking at the funding that startups get. Back in the late 90s, the sort of the prerequisite for getting funded was that you get a whole bunch of Sun hardware and buy some Oracle licenses and write your applications in Java. Then after the dot-com bubble burst in the early 2000s, the equation changed slightly. Rather than buying proprietary Sun hardware, the focus shifted to buying commodity hardware and running Linux on it and running a LAMP stack, which basically included PHP and MySQL. And a part of that equation was also to offshore the development to places like India. The last year or so, we've seen a shift in the funding model as well. And today it seems that most of these startups are getting funded. The sort of one of the secret sauces for getting funded is to make sure that you don't buy any hardware yourself. Now, rather than buying your own hardware and setting up your own data center or renting hardware at one of the managed hosting providers, what you typically do today is you say you're going to run on Amazon's cloud infrastructure. And if you have that, it acts as a ticky mark for the VCs to give you funding. Now, of course, you know, most of you guys aren't selling to the startups. A lot of you are selling to enterprise customers. But the trends that we see in the VC funding, we know that a technology is past the hype stage plans once these once you get these startups being funded, and you know, it's been over a year following this trend. So now we are seeing cloud being talked about in enterprise environments as well. So moving on to slide number four, and another sign that cloud is becoming hot or has already become hot is when all these analysts start talking about it. Analysts like Gartner are saying that cloud computing and virtualization are the top two disruptive technologies for 2009. The spending estimates for cloud computing are also pretty huge. They range, you know, conservative estimates range from, say, $42 billion by 2012, and this is with IDC. Merrill Lynch is a little more bullish on it, and they see the cloud market growing to over $95 billion by 2012. And a big chunk of the cloud spending is related to databases. You know, virtually every application out there is going to require some sort of data store, and that's where, you know, the opportunity for us comes into play for DB2 and IDS. Now, cloud computing has different definitions depending on who you ask. If you look at the Wikipedia, it talks about providing IT capabilities as a service. Forrester has a simpler definition. They say that cloud computing is buying IT capacity and software as needed from a cloud vendor or a cloud service provider. Now I'm going to move to slide number five, and one of the things that we are seeing in today's tough economic climate is a focus on costs and lowering those costs. Customers are looking at, you know, they're still doing projects, they're still working on a new applications, but one of the biggest concerns is how much is going to cost and getting the return on investment and justifying that return on investment before making any investments. And what is ideal in this kind of a economic climate is the benefits that cloud computing and virtualization provide. You know, one of the key things for these technologies is that they both help in lowering the cost of ownership, both the initial as well as the longer term. They also help with more flexible licensing for software and the acquisition of hardware. And moreover, there, you know, as we look at going green and the whole focus on reducing energy costs, cloud computing and virtualization play a key role there as well by helping with consolidation of unutilized resources. Moving to slide number six, and here I'm going to talk a little bit about the benefits of cloud computing, but at the same time, on the left-hand side is the typical cost and usage-based model for traditional IT. So what typically happens is that in your data center, when you start a project, you have to acquire a whole bunch of hardware and a whole bunch of software licenses. So you incur an upfront capital expenditure. And depending on the size of the project, this capital expenditure can be pretty substantial. Now, once you've incurred that initial cost for buying the hardware and the software licenses, then, you know, as you start using that hardware, initially your utilization, you know, doesn't have to be very high. So you're slowly consuming resources, and more user systems, more utilization that you have, and you start to see somewhat of a return on investment. But it takes a while before the upfront investment is recovered. And then you reach a point in time where you've sort of fully utilized all your existing capacity, at which point you go out and buy more hardware and you buy more software licenses for that new hardware. And again, at that point, you incur a significant capital expenditure. And the cycle continues as you do more and more usage. Now, contrast that with cloud computing. In the cloud computing model, typically there isn't an upfront investment. You avoid having that upfront capital expenditure by simply paying for the IT and the software resources as a service. So you either rent the hardware and the software and pay for it on a pay-as-you-go model. So rather than buying an upfront license for the software, or rather than buying a machine upfront or a big server upfront, you rent the capacity. So if you're only going to be utilizing, say, four cores worth of computing power today, that's what you rent. And you don't rent it as in paying for the entire machine upfront. You pay for it as you use it. So typical models are, pay for it, say, by the hour, or in some cases by the day or by the month, rather than paying for, buying the hardware upfront and recovering the cost of it over the next 7 months and years. Now, what I've shown there is sort of a linear line here. As the usage increases, the costs for your utilization also increases. But again, it increases in smaller increments. It's not quite as linear what I've shown. It's more of a staircase. But nonetheless, it's not as drastic as the model in traditional IT, where you have big capital expenditures and then again big capital expenditures after your capacity has been fully utilized. So the key point here is today companies don't have a lot of cash. They're not looking to make big capital expenditures. So how do you convince them to buy more of our software? Well, more likely or not, they're already looking at cloud computing and virtualization technologies. And chances are that they're looking at other competitive options for doing so. So here is the opportunity for us to say, well, with DB2 and IDS, we also do cloud computing, and in fact, we are better suited for cloud computing than our competition. One of the other benefits of cloud computing is the ability to sort of scale on demand. When you're renting resources from a cloud provider, IT resources and software resources from a cloud provider, you're only paying for what you're using. And if all of a sudden you see a spike in your demand, you can simply go and provision more hardware and more software licenses on the fly without incurring that capital expenditure. So it makes that scaling a lot more flexible. And taking care of those peaks and increased surges in demand. And again, by not having to maintain the hardware in your own data center, you're offloading the hassles involved with maintaining the hardware in your data center and the support costs that go along with it. So very, very relevant for today's environment, cloud computing and virtualization. Moving on to slide number 7, and the two sort of main deployment models for clouds are private clouds and public clouds. In fact, many folks don't even consider private clouds as clouds, but I think it's a very viable strategy, especially for enterprise customers. Now, the main difference between private clouds and public clouds is that private clouds is something that organizations set up within their own data center, typically by the IT department, and then offer cloud-like services to the lines of businesses. So they are the ones who set up a huge data center, invest in the hardware, invest in the software, but the lines of businesses pay, have a pay-as-you-go model, and are able to take advantages like provision, more compute capacity as and when needed. And when you don't need that additional capacity, you go back to the levels that you were previously on for your day-to-day sort of workloads. Now, companies can set up their own private clouds using virtualization technologies. So virtualization technologies like the LPAR, dynamic LPARs on the P-Series hardware or VMware and Zen-like virtualization technologies on commodity Intel, AMD boxes using Linux and Windows. And to sort of make it easier for people to deploy their own private clouds, there are several companies that offer cloud-specific, private cloud-specific offerings, and IBM plays a big role there, our services folks. Now, on the public side, it's typically companies, big companies that have that can leverage economies of scale. So, for example, someone like Amazon, they have huge data center, and they buy all this hardware by the truckloads. By being able to buy this huge amount of hardware, their costs for acquiring this hardware, the volume discounts that they get, is typically a lot lower than what it might cost an individual company. Now, by leveraging this huge economies of scale, they're then able to take the spare capacity that they have and offer it to other companies offer it to other companies as a service. So as other companies need IT capacity, they can rent this IT capacity by the hour or by the month or by a year, sort of a model. Now, one of the drawbacks is that you don't get the same sort of security and the privacy, and your connectivity, your bandwidth is through the internet, so you don't get that same levels of security and network utilization that you get in private clouds. But nonetheless, depending on the application, it still might be a very, very viable option for companies, even for enterprise companies. Some of the key players offering public cloud infrastructure include Amazon, Google, FlexiScale, and so on. So that is, so far I've basically talked about, given you an overview of cloud computing, and the benefits of cloud computing and the two main options for cloud computing, that is the private and the public model. And today there's a third model, hybrid cloud model, which sort of joins public and the private clouds, also emerging. Any questions so far before I step into DB2 and IDS and how they exploit cloud computing?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question using your telephone, please press *1. If you're using a speakerphone, please ensure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question using your telephone, please press *1.
Okay, so if there aren't any questions, I'll continue and...
Mr. Ahuja, we do have a question from the phone lines. That'll come from Steve Stampion from Ingram Micro.
Hi there.
I'm wondering on the
ownership of the licenses when you're using cloud computing. Is the person that is delivering the cloud system considered the owner or the actual people that are receiving it, the services of the cloud provider, the owner?
Okay. That's a good question, and it actually, there are both those models exist. That is, the cloud provider could be the owner of the license, or the organization utilizing the cloud could be the owner of the license. And as I talk more about DB2 and IDS, I'll talk about both these models being available for IBM software.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Roz, we also had a question come in through the Same Time Unite webcast, a question from Alan Schneider. And Alan is wondering what percentage of the clouds are private versus public?
Okay. It's sort of hard to say that with certainty. I mean, we do hear about the public clouds. It's, you know, the information is a lot more public. But the work that companies are doing in their own private data centers, that often isn't necessarily shared publicly. Now, there are lots and lots of companies that are implementing private clouds using virtualization technologies. In fact, one of the stats that I was looking at said that about 46% of the companies in 2009 have already deployed some virtualized infrastructure or are looking to do so in, or are going to do so in 2009.
Okay, thanks, Rob. And I have one other question from DSA. Question is, what is the difference between cloud and older application hosting models? Is this just a change in terminology?
Yes, that's a great question. And it's more than just a change in terminology. So there have been older hosting models or ASP models but cloud computing is different in the sense that that you can truly get services as pay as you go model on the utility computing model, and without having to deal with the hassles and support involved. The other thing is the flexibility of sort of being able to scale out on demand, which might have been difficult in traditional ASP models. Okay, any further questions, or should I move on to DB2 and IDS?
There are none from the phone lines.
All right, so I am now on slide number 8. And here I'll talk briefly about, you know, what sort of applications or usage scenarios is DB2 and IDS suitable for cloud deployments. And when we look at what types of customers are going to be benefiting from databases in the cloud, the list ranges, across the spectrum, you know, all the way from startups where cloud computing is sort of primarily optional, to SMBs who really don't want to be bothered with maintaining their own hardware infrastructure, and even enterprises are looking at cloud computing or already utilizing cloud computing for a variety of their applications. Perhaps not today for their most mission-critical applications, but nonetheless, there is a class of applications in enterprises where cloud computing can be very, very suitable. And then there are a variety of business partners who can benefit from using DB2 and making their offerings available on the cloud and making DB2 or IDS a part of their infrastructure in the cloud, including SaaS vendors. The kinds of applications or usage scenarios that today DB2 and IDS would be most suited for, there are several. And the first one is for test and quality assurance. So you usually start simple, you start small, and then you go for other more rigorous workloads. So test and QA, I mean, let me give you an example that we currently do in our own DB2 development environment. We have numerous test environments. Before we actually release the new release of the product or new version of the product, DB2 runs on Linux. There are several Linux distributions. There is a 32-bit and the 64-bit flavors. Then there is Windows, and then there are several versions of Windows, all the way from XP to Vista to Windows Server 2003, etc. And then there is AIX and other Unix operating systems. Now, if we were to set up a new machine for every combination of the operating system and the hardware, it's going to be cost prohibitive. At the same time, the time involved in setting these systems up is going to be enormous. And most of the time, they don't even get utilized. When you're closer to shipping a release or a fix pack, for a few weeks, you might be really stressing these systems out. But most of the time, they're sitting unutilized when there isn't a lot of testing being done. So in order to sort of work around this issue and to get better utilization, we set up as a private cloud using a VMware virtualization technology for our Linux and Windows environments. And basically, we have a VMware virtualized environment where there are images for both 32-bit and 64-bit Linux distributions and various flavors of Windows, and they are fired up on demand. So if I want to do some testing on Windows XP, I fire up that VMware virtual workstation and do my testing. At the same time, my machine might have 4 CPUs, and I might create several other virtual machines or partitions where I'm running other tests concurrently. That way my machine utilization is fully utilized. And when I'm not doing the testing, that same hardware can be utilized for other purposes, again using virtualization technology in our internal private cloud. So test and QA for database applications is definitely an area that enterprises can start exploring right away on the cloud. And then there is this whole Web 2.0 class of applications, which is very much services-oriented. And cloud computing is very well-suited for services-based architectures. So if companies are looking to do to build Web 2.0 applications, typically these applications would be deployed on the internet in the public cloud. Why not have them run right out of the public cloud as well? So Web 2.0 is definitely a class of applications well suited for the cloud, and using DB2 and IDS databases on the back end. There's a lot of data that is generated by web applications. So at the very basic level, things like logs from the customer surfing your website. And then there's a whole variety of other data that's generated on the web. So while it's on the web, why not just store it again on the web infrastructure using a cloud that you might have out on the internet. Then as enterprises are starting off applications for their departments, which are smaller applications, again, they might not have today the hardware that they need or the capital expenditure to procure the hardware. So putting those applications out on a public cloud is very viable. There's a whole class of applications where you basically have, for a very short period of time, a huge capacity demand, and such as when you're doing batch processing. During the day, it might be empty, but at night, you might be running batch processing for 2 hours or so. But if it's a huge processing job, rather than taking 2 hours, it might take 10 hours. And you might not want to have it take 10 hours because you're starting transactional applications again in the morning. So batch processing is an ideal candidate for deploying in the cloud. You might have seasonal applications, for example, end of quarter or end of year processing, that rather than buying a new hardware and have it sit idle for most of the year, why not virtualize it or use a public cloud for doing those seasonal applications. Highly variable workloads where you are not really sure of how much utilization you might have. It might be, 5% at one point and then peak to 90%, but there might not be any trend as to when it's going to peak to 90% or 95%. So those kinds of things, it's much easier to scale up in the cloud than it is in your traditional data center in-house. And then there are applications which are compute intensive. For example, in the financial sector, you might be doing complex options modeling, and these option modeling might require a database in the back end. Or in the biotechnology area, you might be doing protein or gene sequencing, again, using databases in the back end. So those kinds of applications which require a lot of processing can be run using public clouds. Now, a caveat here that, usually it's a good idea to start simple, start small, before you take your most critical applications and put them out in the cloud, or taking your most IO-intensive workloads and putting them in the cloud. You might be better off by taking your IO-intensive workloads and running them in-house, at least in the shorter term, until the public cloud computing technologies are more mature and more robust for these types of workloads. So I expect that to happen over time, but perhaps today is not the right time for it. Now I'm going to move to slide number 9, and here I'm going to talk about the two sort of main deployment models, one the private clouds and the other the public clouds. So when you're talking about private clouds, that is, in your own data center, you're setting up a cloud for your organization, you can do so very easily using DB2 or IDS. And that is because DB2 and IDS support virtualization licensing or subcapacity licensing. And what I mean by that is, say, for example, you have 16 CPU machine, a big P series machine, and you're not going to be really using all of the processors on that machine for, say, DB2. You might only be using DB2 in a four processor LPAR, in which case you don't have to license DB2 for the entire 16 processors. You can license it only for that four LPARs on that machine, four CPU LPAR on that machine. And similarly, because it's within the four cores and the 16 gigabytes that DB2 Workgroup can run on, you don't have to get DB2 Enterprise Edition. You could be using DB2 Workgroup if you don't need the extra functionality that is in the Enterprise Edition. So that's one example of where you could be using DB2 or IDS in a virtualized environment to set up your own private cloud. The second deployment model for the cloud is public clouds. And when we talk about public clouds, Amazon Web Services or AWS is sort of synonymous with cloud computing. It's probably the most actively used cloud computing environment in the public space. And it's expected that 80% of the public cloud computing is being driven through Amazon Web Services. I'm going to talk about a couple of things that, terminology that you might come across when you're talking about Amazon cloud computing. And the first one there is EC2, or Elastic Compute Cloud. And that is basically the runtime environment or the virtual machines within which you can run your workload. You can rent these virtual machines or EC2 instances, as they're called, by the hour. And the pricing starts as low as 10 cents per hour. And in fact, if you give them an upfront commitment, just recently Amazon announced that you can get even lower per hour pricing. That is, if you say you're going to utilize that machine for a year, then you can get less than 10 cents per hour for utilizing the hardware. Now, you know, compare that to traditional machines. You know, this is going to work out. You know, 10 cents per hour is going to work out to less than $1,000 a year, or $1,000 a year. Compare that to a traditional IT data center that you might have in-house. There, your typical cost of ownership for a similarly configured, you know, one CPU machine would be in excess of $5,000 to $6,000 a year. So there is definitely cost savings to be had by utilizing Amazon's cloud infrastructure here. Or the simple storage service, which starts at 15 cents per gigabyte per month. And then there's also elastic block storage, and that starts at 10 cents per gigabyte per month. And then another very common term that you'll hear in context of Amazon Web Services is AMI, or Amazon Machine Image. And AMI is essentially think of it as a virtual image which contains both the operating system as well as any software. And this virtual image can then be executed on an EC2 virtualized infrastructure. So you can create an AMI beforehand, and this AMI on demand, you can provision it on an EC2 instance and start paying 10 cents an hour. And when you're no longer in need of that compute resource, you basically switch off the instance, and at that point you don't get charged anymore for the underlying hardware. So that's basically some terminology around AWS. And now let's talk about what offerings are available for DB2 and IDS on Amazon's cloud infrastructure, and I'm on slide number 11. Now, on February 11th, 2009, we announced a partnership between IBM and Amazon Web Services, and as part of this announcement, we announced three main things. The first was the availability of development use AMIs, that is pre-bundled AMIs from IBM, which consists of the OS. In this case, it's a Linux OS, basically SLES 10, as well as IBM middleware. So there's AMIs for DB2, there's AMIs for IDS. In case of DB2, it's DB2 Express C, and in case of IDS, the AMI consists of Linux and IDS Developer Edition. Now, these AMIs are no cost, as in no cost for using DB2 or no cost for using the operating system that comes in these AMIs. However, you would still pay Amazon for utilizing their hardware infrastructure, and you know, pay that per hourly usage charges while you're using the infrastructure. So it's an easy way. If you hear about customers interested in trying out DB2, one of the first things to do is, you know, sure, and it's not going to cost you anything for DB2 licensing. Go try it out, or IDS licensing. Go try out these free AMIs that we've made available on Amazon. Now, the other thing that we announced was that in the second quarter of 2009, and this is likely in April mid to late April timeframe, or could be a little later. We announced that we're going to be making available paid AMIs for a select set of IBM middleware. And this includes AMIs for DB2 Express, DB2 Workgroup, would be charged by the hour. So basically, you would be renting or licensing DB2 or IDS by the hour. The pricing is yet to be announced, but for example, you could have DB2 Express and pay 35 cents an hour, and 35 cents an hour would include the usage of DB2. It would include the usage or the licensing for the underlying operating system that the AMI is built on. In this case, it's Novell's SUSE Linux Enterprise Server. And it would also include the pricing for the Amazon's underlying infrastructure, the 10 cents an hour that they charge for utilizing the EC2 small instance. And the third option that, or the third thing that we announced on February 11th was that you can take, or customers can take their licenses, IBM software licenses, and deploy them on Amazon EC2. That is, they're entitled to take their existing licenses, or they might go buy new licenses and deploy them, you know, create their own AMIs using their own licensed operating systems and deploy them on Amazon's cloud. And this number three here is basically the key opportunity for our sales representatives as well as our business partners to bring in some incremental revenue. Sure, lots of companies might have some existing licenses that are not being utilized, so that's a starting point. You know, encourage them to go put their existing licenses that are not being used, put them on the cloud and start using them. But pretty soon, they're, you know, once they get addicted to the cloud, they're going to want new licenses for new workloads and new applications. And that's an opportunity for us to go out and be selling more DB2 and selling more IDS licenses. So at this time, I'm going to take a few questions that have come online. And one of the questions is, you know, from Laurie, is what about high availability and SLAs and disaster recovery and data protection, et cetera, when it comes to cloud providers? And it's actually, you know, by now, until last year, the Amazon cloud infrastructure was still considered beta. Now it's gone past that beta stage, which means that you can be running enterprise workloads in these clouds and be able to get certain levels of SLAs and availability, et cetera, things like high availability. So, in fact, the availability that you might get might be even higher than what you might see in a traditional data center. For example, the failure rate for a typical hard drive is about 4 to 5% in a typical data center, whereas in Amazon's cloud infrastructure, what they do is they have redundant hard drives, et cetera, and you're able to create snapshots of your EBS volumes and you know, use them for backup or redundancy purposes, and that way your failure rate goes down to less than 1% a year. Now again, if you're putting together your own cloud infrastructure or private cloud infrastructure, you can set up your own SLAs and, you know, guarantee that data protection, et cetera. So if you're concerned about data security, for example, and putting that data out in the public cloud, putting it in a private cloud is a is an option that is available. So there's another question from Laurie, and she asks that how much more costly does it get if you want those kinds of additional services, that is, you know, SLA guarantees and performance guarantees, etc. Well, actually, it doesn't get a lot more costly. Most of the performance SLAs and disaster recovery, etc., is typically built into the service. And then, again, if you look at the Amazon's terms and conditions, you'll see some of that. So it actually might be less costly for you to do it on a public cloud than rather than trying to do it on your own. But again, it goes back to what, you know, what level of data protection, et cetera, do you want. Okay. Another question from Fariba about the use of Passport Advantage licenses on AWS. Well, what I would encourage you to do is at the end of the webcast, there is a link on the last slide to the DB2 Cloud page on our internal wiki, on the DB2 9.5 wiki. And that's where there are some links. There's links to some frequently asked questions about deploying existing licenses and putting them on the cloud. For example, one of the things, one of the resources included is a link to where you can calculate how many PVUs would equate to, you know, how many, you know, the size of the virtual instance in Amazon's cloud infrastructure. So follow that link, read up on that FAQ, but basically the idea is that you can take, you know, in lots of cases, customers might be using user-based pricing, and you can use user-based pricing. In other cases, the customers want to be using, you know, processor-based or PVU-based pricing, and again, there's a conversion chart that helps you determine how many PVUs correspond to the Amazon virtual image size. But, you know, you can take any IBM software and deploy it on the Amazon cloud infrastructure as long as the hardware and the software environment underneath are supported. The operating system that you're running on is supported by that IBM software. Okay. So since we are coming close to the end, what I'm going to do is skip over slide number 12, which is basically what I mostly talked about in slide number 11, and skip over cloud number slide number 13 as well, and go to slide number 14 and the competitive advantage that we have in cloud environments with DB2 and IDS over folks like Oracle and Microsoft. So when it comes to private clouds, this is where you would typically use virtualization technologies to set up your own cloud infrastructure. DB2 offers more flexible and, you know, simpler licensing terms for these virtualized environments than both Oracle and Microsoft. For example, Oracle only allows you to license their software for partitioning or virtualized environments if you're using hard partitioning. Whereas if you're using soft partitioning is things like when you're using VMware or Xen environments or the Microsoft virtualization, there you have to pay for the full capacity of the system. So if you have a 16 CPU system, you know, you have to license Oracle database for the entire 16 CPUs. Whereas with DB2, if you're only using four of those CPUs, by creating a soft partition using VMware, you only have to pay for that 4 CPUs. Microsoft, again, with their Express and Workgroup editions, they only are, with their standard edition, they only let you use subcapacity licensing if the number of CPUs that you have is so. For example, you could end up in a scenario where you've created you have 4 CPUs and you've created 6 partitions using 6 virtual processors. So in this case, you'd end up paying Microsoft for 6 CPUs rather than the machine physically having just 4 processors. In the public clouds, Oracle does not offer per hourly priced Amazon machine instances. You have to buy their expensive full licenses to be able to run in the cloud. Whereas with DB2 you get that flexibility of being able to license DB2 and IDS, Express and Workgroup on an hourly basis. And Microsoft is the opposite. They offer AMIs, but their per hourly pricing and the usage of Microsoft SQL Server in the cloud is considered beta at this stage. So you can't really do production workloads yet with Microsoft. Okay, so slide number 15, and how does it affect your compensation? Well, if a customer buys a software license through Passport Advantage, then it's business as usual. You would get compensation like any, whether it's deployment on the cloud or off-deployed cloud deployments, you would, it count to your quota just the way it does today. Doesn't matter if it's in the cloud or not. So this is where, for our sales reps and for channel reps, it makes a lot of sense for selling new software licenses. The other option is if customers are using paid AMIs through Amazon, the specific hourly priced AMIs that Amazon has OEM'd from IBM. In this case, there you can get comped. In order to get comped, you have to follow the OEM landing credit process, which is a little bit more tedious. So to summarize on slide number 16, well, cloud computing is highly disruptive, but don't be afraid of it. Embrace it. Chances are that your customers are already thinking about cloud, and if they are thinking about cloud, make sure that you're leading with DB2 or IDS. Make them aware that we have cloud options available so that they don't go out and bring in other database vendors for their cloud database needs. There's an opportunity here to generate new sales of DB2 and IDS licenses by identifying opportunities that your customers might have. So talk to your customers, ask them if they're looking at cloud deployments or not. And if they are, let's do a briefing with them and update them on our cloud strategy. In fact, I would very much encourage you to pass on the word to your customers and other business partners about an upcoming DB2 chat with the lab, specifically on cloud computing, where we'll cover more details than I've covered today. About DB2 on cloud computing, and slide number 17 has the link for this upcoming webcast on March 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern. The other thing, you can point them to ibm.com/db2/labchats, and it'll have the description of this webcast and how to go register for this webcast. So please pass on the word and let your customers be aware of what IBM has to offer for cloud computing with DB2. And later on, we'll be having a similar call, Informix chat with the lab for IDS customers as well. And lastly, on slide number 18, there's a link to our internal wiki with which has further links and resources for our various cloud information. So that's pretty much it, and I'm going to switch to questions. We're over time, but for those of you who can stay on, we'll spend about a few minutes going through the questions. Okay. So let's open up the line for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, that is star one for questions.
And Roswell, we're waiting for some audio questions. I have a couple more that have come in through the chat. A question from Kathy about why would a customer buy DB2 IDS licenses in a cloud architecture? Why wouldn't they just pay for the hourly price to AMS? And then in addition to that, if IBM and Amazon together give the option of hourly pricing, why would a customer buy the DB2 IDS licenses?
Okay. So it all goes back on what you want to do in the cloud. If you don't have any DB2 licenses already, then, you know, buying... renting DB2 and the paying for it by the hour can make sense. Now, we offer this option for DB2 Express and Workgroup, as well as IDS Express and Workgroup. If, for example, you need some additional features, functionality that are not available in the Express or the Workgroup editions, that is, you want to use Enterprise Server Edition, in that case, you know, you don't really have an option to rent DB2 by the hour. You'd have to, you know, use your upfront license that you've purchased from IBM. Or you might already have existing licenses that are not being utilized. So in that case, it might make more sense to take those existing licenses and put them on the cloud rather than paying extra for the hourly AMIs. The second thing about the why you might want to use your own licenses is that the AMIs that are being made available on AWS or Amazon, those are going to be built on SUSE SLES 10 at this time. If you want to use a different operating system, for example, you want to use Red Hat Enterprise Linux, or you might want to use Windows, in that scenario, you can build your own AMI, and when you build your own AMI, you have to have a license, your own license for the your own license for the operating system as well as IBM software that you put on it. So those are a couple of reasons why you might consider using your own licenses versus using by the hour AMIs that we provide. Okay, further questions?
And just a reminder, that is star one for questions over the phone. If you find your question has been answered, you can press the pound key to be removed from queue.
And again, Rob, while we wait for questions to come over the phone line, I have one more that came in through the chat from Alan Schneider, and it was, how do we know if an AMI has landed in our territory?
Alan, that's a good question, and I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I assume it would be similar to the process that we currently have in place with other OEMs, where the OEMs give us a quarterly update of the sales that they've done and to which customers. And I assume that Amazon is going to be doing the same to us, letting us know about which customers have purchased EMIs. And then you can check whether they fall in your territory and follow the OEM landing credit process. And again, once I have more details on it, I'm going to go post these details into the DB2 9.5 wiki, for which you have a link at the end of the presentation.
There are no questions over the phone lines.
Okay, Rob. Okay. Any final comments, Rob?
No, that's about it. You know, feel free to engage me if there's any opportunities that come up. If there's customers included interested in cloud computing, let us know. We'll brief them about our offerings and our.
I believe we've just lost the audio from Rob. So with that, I will go ahead.
Cloud computing on March 25th. Thank you.
Oh, Rob, sorry. We lost your audio for a moment, though. So with that, we will go ahead and wrap up the call. And just a reminder that today was our last call for the first quarter. We will not be holding calls over the next 2 weeks to allow you to focus on closing business. We'll pick up the Successfully Selling series again on Monday, April 6th. So happy selling, successful selling to all of you in the first quarter. We'll look forward to talking to you next quarter. And for those of you still on the Same Time Unite session, if you are looking for how to access a hard copy of the presentation, an electronic copy, I will put up the URL in just a moment where you can access it. Business partners, if you do not have access to the media library, so what you need to do is if you are not already on my distribution list through which I email this presentation to business partners, please drop me an email to be added to that distribution. It's Marcia, M-A-R-C-I-A, dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at us.ibm.com. Just send me a note, and I will get the presentation to those of you who are business partners. So with that, thank you, everyone, for joining today's call, and thank you, Rob, very much for a very interesting topic. We'll talk to you in second quarter.
And that concludes today's teleconference. Thank you all once again for joining us today. Have a wonderful day.